Kendall. I'm a living love by Jesus. I'm recovering from addiction to, recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food, work, and control, and issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. And when I was a little boy, we didn't have a TV. We lived about 20 minutes south of Rupp Arena, which wasn't even there then. And we used to sit around the kitchen table on a little Sony transistor radio run by a 9-volt battery. And we would listen to Adolph Rupp coach the Wildcats. So I've been a Wildcat fan since I was little bitty. And I'm used to them winning and I'm used to them losing. So it doesn't bother me too bad. So we're pulling for South Carolina. Is that who we're pulling for now? Yeah. Go Beans. I'm not one who thinks along the lines of a calendar. It's this time of year, so we should talk about this, or it's this time of year, or this date, so we should send flowers to somebody or candy to somebody. I just have always been a rebel when it comes to that. It's like, if you love somebody just spontaneously, let them know when you feel like it. Don't look at the calendar saying, today's the day we're supposed to do such and such or so and so. Because I've always kind of had a problem with the Christian calendar as well. Why should we just think about the events of Easter and, well, Good Friday and Easter right around Easter time? Why should we just think about the events of the Nativity right around Christmas time? But it's kind of hard not to, you know? You're just kind of hard not to. And so we're in the Easter season. We're in Lent right now, and we're heading up to Easter. And so this is a point in human history where God did something pretty significant. And we're not going to specifically talk about Easter or Good Friday, but for the next couple Sundays, we're going to just talk about God. I mean, imagine that. A faith-based recovery ministry, we would talk about God. I mean, how strange. But we believe in recovery, but we believe that recovery comes from God, and so we want to know who this God is we're talking about. So we're going to have three parts. Tonight, we're going to ask, who is God? And then next Sunday night, we're going to ask, what is he like? And Jeremy and I are going to tag team on that one next Sunday night. And then the third Sunday, we're going to talk about, so what can we expect from God? I mean, if he's real and if he's like we say he is, what can we expect in this relationship with him? And what should we not expect out of this? So we're going to kind of break it down into three parts. The problem when you start talking about God is that it often becomes very conceptual. It becomes academic. It becomes like you talk about in a classroom, and it's not real, and it's you can't touch it, and you can't feel it, and you can't see it, and you can't smell it. So sometimes these lessons become real sleepers. And so I've decided to take all my clothes off. No. But I've got your attention now. I've got your attention. So yeah, my wife's like, no. Yeah, she had a mouthful of water. So, okay, so I have to, in 5 minutes from now, I have to do something again, right, to keep your attention? Okay, I'll just tell you, we got four things that we're going to talk about tonight. And it's kind of four different ways of thinking of God. Who is God? So let me get right into it. I know a lot of doctors believe in God, and a lot of doctors believe that he's real and actual, and I know that. But a lot of people in the scientific/medical profession don't really believe in a literal, actual God. And so they will come in prior to a surgery or prior to a really delicate, you know, procedure, and they'll say, we're going to give you this medication, we're going to do this procedure. Oh, and if you believe in prayer and that sort of thing, then go ahead and pray. And what they're really saying is, you know, to maintain good physical health, you probably need vitamin C and fresh vegetables every day and some exercise. And to maintain spiritual and mental health, you need some sort of concept of God, you know. And if it's not God, maybe it could be Bigfoot, or maybe it could be an alien, or maybe it could be whatever. But you need some sort of concept in your mind of something bigger than you in order to maintain spiritual and mental health. He's not real, but you need the thought here to maintain some sort of mental health. And what they're saying is that humans can't survive without some sort of idea or hope or concept of the other, you know, some kind of higher power. So everybody tracking with me there? So this kind of God is just kind of a conceptual God. He's not real. He's not, there's no basis for him in history. There's no, it's just a healthy mental spiritual thing to delve into. Now, if we were to send a survey around the room and say, is this your God? I have a hunch, I don't know this, but I have a hunch that almost everybody we'd hear would say, no, I don't vote for that one. But I could be wrong. And you, if you voted for that one, you would not be demonized. That'd be okay. But that's the first thing, is that God, for some people, God is just simply an essential component for mental health. That's who he is. The second one here is that God is some sort of kind of disinterested cosmic force. I never really was able to articulate this until a couple years ago. I had a conversation with Jake. Jake's not here tonight. He's not feeling well. But I sat down with him, and Jake described this God. This is not the God he believes in, but he described this God, and I thought, whoa, I've known about this God forever, but I've never been able to articulate it the way you just did. So I'm going to pretty much word for word tell you what Jake told me, my son told me, a couple years ago. He said a lot of people believe that God is this kind of distant cosmic person, force, personality, mind, whatever you want to call it, who says, I'm going to create a race of beings and give them a free will, and then I'm going to give them a manual. I'm going to give them a policy and procedural manual called the Bible, and I'm going to give them, 70 to 90 years on the planet as an average. I'm going to give them that long, and they have to get it right within that period of time, or they're toast for eternity. They burn in hell for all eternity. And I thought, whoa, I've never thought about that in that way before, but I thought, you just nailed it. You just nailed it. A lot of the places that we have been, a lot of churches that we have been to where we got religiously abused, doesn't it sound familiar? You know, you get it right, you get one chance to get it right. You get one lifetime to get it right, and if you don't, you burn for eternity in hell. Wow, I want to cozy up next to that God. You know, I really want to get close to him. But, I mean, I've had enough of you. I see your heads. You're like, yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah. And I sat in camp meetings as a child. I sat in camp meetings swatting bugs and mosquitoes and 90-degree weathers. And weathers? That's plural for weather. We had two weathers at camp meeting. Depending on which side of the tabernacle you sat on. But all this steam and hot weather and the bugs and the yellow light, so there wouldn't be as many bugs, but it didn't work. And then you had this guy that was standing up front just spitting. I don't know if anybody else had this. But just spitting and fuming and marching up and down and dangling you by a thread over the flames of hell, you know. And he was describing this kind of God. You got one lifetime to get it right. And if you don't, you are toast. And the whole idea is to scare you to death with the threat of hell. And I lived in that, but I was never able to put it that way until Jake said it the way he said it. And I thought, whoa. No, not interested. So that's number two. Number three is, it is number two. I didn't just say that. not. I'm thinking mathematically. Come on, Greg. It's number two right here on my notes. And then there's like a third. See, you're not asleep. I didn't even have to take my clothes off. You're not asleep. So here's the third idea of God. And this one hits close to home. This one hits close to home because this is where I lived for a long time until I got in recovery. And so I kind of identify with this. This is Adam and Eve's version, but especially Eve's version of God. The God I'm trying to become. First, there's people who just have a concept of God. And then there are other people who kind of, they see God as very threatening and very absolutely judicial. But then there's the God I'm trying to become. Really, my God to me is just a perfected version of myself. What I really want to become. And if you think about the garden, and we've talked about this before. You think about the garden, and God created day after day after day, and he said, it's good, it's good, it's good, it's good. And he made Adam and he made Eve and put them together, and he said, that is very good, very good. And then the evil one, don't know if it's a snake, don't know what it was, don't have to go there, don't have to worry about that. But the idea came from somebody, came to Eve, and said, you can be better than very good. You can be perfect. You can be like God. Very good is not good enough. And God saying very good is a pretty big thing. When God pronounces it very good, that's a pretty big thing. But yet, the evil one, the tempter, whatever you want to say, he whispered in her ear and he said, but you can be better than that. And I've lived my whole life prior to recovery trying to be better than what I really was. Trying to be something more than what I really was. Trying to be a better version of what God had already called very good. And it's gotten me into a mess. But what I was trying to do was I was trying to perfect myself into who I thought God was. Isn't that really what we're doing? We're trying to become God. Well, who is God? Well, he's just a better version of me. So I want to perfect myself and get myself up to that better version of myself. And what I've noticed is it depends on where you come from. If you come from the Church of Christ, or if you come from the Baptist church, or if you come from a Pentecostal church, if you come from a real legalistic setting, or if you come from whatever, wherever you come from, they kind of get you started. And these are our pet scriptures that feed our idea of who you ought to be. In other words, who God is. So it's interesting, if you go to different churches, they have a bin over here, not literally, but they have a bin of favorite scriptures. These are our favorite scriptures. And wherever you go, they all have their own particular set of them. And they usually describe, this is how you be a better version of yourself. This is how you be like God. And so we get really selective and really picky. And have any of y'all done this kind of study where you literally delve into different denominations and you kind of look at their, can we use that word, pet scriptures? It's fascinating. Robbie and I grew up in a church that was absolutely, and I'm not talking about, they didn't talk about it as a health issue. If you smoked a cigarette, you went to hell. And it was not a health issue. It was a moral issue. That was drummed into, that's what they spit and fumed about at camp meeting in the summer. And we heard it over and over. And if you danced, and if you played, you could play rook, but you couldn't use playing cards and, you know, play hearts or something like that. Am I describing your upbringing? But see, Larry and I have had long conversations. He grew up in a completely different scenario, but his scenario had their list of things. So wherever you go to these various denominations, they will pick out scriptures, put them in a bin and say, do this and you will be a better person and actually you'll become like God. And so that becomes our version of God. God is just a better version or a perfect version of me, or God is who I really want to be. What a terrible way to live. I mean, what if you never get there. You never get there, you know, but you keep striving and you keep trying to work these scriptures and you keep trying to, you know, if I just work harder, if I just, you know, and you never get there. You keep feeding yourself these scriptures, and your heart never changes, and your motives never change, and your attitudes and your behavior never changes, because this God is not real. He doesn't have any ability to change you, because all he is just a better version of you that you've come up with in your mind with the help of your, whoever it is, denomination, mentor, somebody, you know, whoever trained you, the school you went to, whatever it is. So, those are our first three. An essential mental component, a disinterested cosmic force, or the God I'm trying to become. And the fourth one I put down is the God I've discovered here in recovery. As long as I've been here, this God becomes more and more real to me. This God is a real, and the word real sometimes gets abused and gets kind of fluffy and muddy and foggy. So I decided to tack another word onto it. This God is an actual, factual, real parent. And he's not just our father. He's our mother as well. Some people really rebel about the shack. There's no, how dare you ever characterize God the Father as a black woman? How could you dare do that? Go back and read your scripture more deeply. Go soak that in. God is not male or female, but God is our parent. He's our creator. He's our parent, and he loves us like a mother, and he loves us like a father. And if God is real, if God is actual, then he's a force to be reckoned with. Now what are you going to do? He's not just a concept in your mind. He's not just a set of rules. He's not just a better version of me. He is real, and he's not just here. He exists out there, whether I believe in him or not. Now we got a problem with that. I smile and put that in air quotes, but we've got a problem because God is actual and factual and real, and he's our parent. I don't want to say too much about what he's like, because we're going to get into that next week. So he can be intimately involved in my life. He is fraught with mystery. As soon as you acknowledge that God is real, but he's other. He's not me. He's not in my mind. He's other, out there. You've opened the door to mystery. You've opened the door to magic. You've opened the door to miracles. You've opened the door to divine invasion, divine interaction. You opened the door to all these things. I don't know for sure what that looks like. I know people try to pin it down, say God did this, God did that, God did this. I don't try to do that anymore. I don't try to speak for God and say he did this or didn't do that. I'm scared to do that, you know. But I do know that as soon as I open the door to an actual, factual, real God, then I've got problems, because he's going to start showing up all over the map. And he's going to show up where he wants to show up and when he wants to show up. And he's going to do what he wants to do, not always what I want him to do. And it's out of my control. He's not in my mind where I can control him anymore. And I can't control him with certain scriptures anymore. You know, these are my pet scriptures, so I know where God is, so I've got him in a handy box. He is out there, and he's doing whatever he wants to do. I guess the slang for that, whatever the heaven he wants to do. You know, he's doing it, you know, in his way and the way he wants to do it. And the possibilities of this are beyond our wildest imagination, and they're completely out of our control. And, I mean, there are a good number of us here tonight who were here last Sunday night. God just decided to show up in this, blew us all away. He just decided to show up. There is no formula to make that happen. There's no strings that get pulled. There's no say these magic words and God will do what you want him to do. God just said, guess what I'm going to do? and he just showed up. And I mean, he always is here, but I mean, he kicked up some dust last Sunday night, some righteous dust, and it was a sight to behold. I'll never forget it. And those who are here would say, I'll never forget that. It was wonderful. So sometimes when I go through these lessons, I'll just admit it's kind of like I'm setting us all up. I was a philosophy major in college, and so we debated things a lot and argued. And one of the methods to winning an argument was if you talked about a bad idea or an idea that was against you, you would call it building a straw man. You would tell their case, but you would tell it real loosely and real in bad terms and create a straw man out of it, so it was real easy to kick it over, so you could stand there and say, see, I was right. That way's wrong, that way's wrong. And so that's what I've done tonight. I'm not going to try to lie to you. That's what I've done. You see right through it anyway. But don't you know people? Seriously, don't you know people who really would say God is nothing more than a component in your mind that you need just to be mentally healthy? You know people like that. You know people who fear him as this cosmic disinterested force who loves to just threaten you with hell. So, I mean, we know people live there, and we also know what it's like to try to become God, try to perfect ourselves and become God. So, sure, these are ways that we think, no, I don't want to be that person. But I tried to present them in kind of a negative light. I'm not going to lie to you. I tried to. But this last one is the one that troubles me. This fourth one is the one that troubles me. Because I can't put it in a good light or a bad light. I just have to say, God is real. And really, I kind of just have to put a period. You know? I'm not going to try to speak for him. I'm not going to try to... He's real. So what we're going to talk about next week, so is he a mean God? Or is he a kind God? You know, is he a prickly God? You know, porcupiney? Or is he a, come, let me give you a hug God? So we're going to kind of, next week we're going to talk about, so if he is real, which if we took a vote, would we, most of us vote God is real? God is actual? I think most of us would vote that. So we've all passed that test, which I admit was rigged. You know, I'm not going to lie to you, it was rigged. yeah, I work for the government. It's rigged. So next week we're going to talk about, so what is he like? You know, if he took a personality test, what would that say about him? If he walked into your living room and sat down and talked with you, well, what is he like? And we're going to talk about that. And Jeremy's got all the answers for next week. Yay. He's got them. All right. We're going to do a last song.